Tuesday, January 31st, 2017, meeting of the Government Operations and Policies Election Committee. And we do have a quorum. And so with that, Representative Freiberg, have you had a chance to review the minutes from our previous meeting?
I did, and I would move approval.
Representative Freiberg moves approval of the January 26, 2017 minutes for the Government Operations and Elections Policy Committee. Any corrections, additions? Hearing none, seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Our first bill today on the calendar is House File 409, and I just was trying to debate whether I should ask Representative Albright if she's real fine, this 409.
Oh.
Representative Albright, welcome
Mr.
to
Chair,
the committee.
Mr. Chair, you're dating yourself with that reference.
I apparently am, because no one said anything here. That was just that horrible of an attempt. Representative Albright will move House File 409 before the committee to be re-referred to the Committee on State Government Finance. Representative Albright, welcome to the committee, and proceed with your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning to you and to the members of the committee. Mr. Chair, before I continue, I would like to take up and move the A1 amendment.
Representative Albright would like to bring forward the A1 amendment. I will offer the A1 amendment. Representative Albright, if you want to explain to the committee the A1 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the A1 amendment members make some friendly additions that are of a technical nature, as well as improves the bill, in my opinion, to incorporate into insurance trusts that we can get to with my testifiers. But with that, Mr. Chair, I would encourage members to approve the addition of the amendment.
Again, I move the A1 amendment to House File 409. Get the bill in the shape that the author wishes. All those in favor of the A1 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Representative Albright, the bill is in the form that you wish. Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, House File 409 is a modest expansion of the authority of cities and counties to invest in limited types of equity investments for certain purposes. Let me just articulate those for you. Long-term capital plans, funds held to offset long-term environmental exposures, pension liabilities, post-employment benefit liabilities, and compensation absences. It provides the expanded authority generally in response to recent changes in governmental accounting standards, which have changed from pay-as-you-go accounting for some of those costs to one that identifies the cost of those liabilities as they accrue. In other circumstances, the state requires to set aside monies for closure and or post-closure costs for landfills. The expanded authority that is enumerated in this bill is limited to mutual funds indexed to the S&P 500 or the Dow Jones U.S. Total Stock Market Index, and or those that are advised to and governed by the SBI. Local governments already have over $300 million invested in equities under the current law, so that is not something new or not germane to the workaday that they undertake. The bill would expand the authority to invest in limited types of equity investments to 25 cities and counties, those over 100,000 in population, as well as smaller cities and counties with a AAA bond rating. The manner in which these monies invested with the SBI are administered by PARA under the bill comports the administration of monies invested with SBI currently with other post-employment benefits, basically those that are pertaining to retiree health care benefits. No more than 15% of a city or county's unassigned funds can be invested in the limited types of equity investments permitted under this bill. And with that, I am happy to entertain questions, but I also bring to your attention, I have a very learned individual sitting with me at the testifiers table, Mr. Keith Carlson, who has some comments as well as some additional testifiers that would like to make their comments known about this bill, Mr. Chair.
Representative Albright, thank you. Before we get to Mr. Carlson and the other testifiers, Representative Nelson has a question. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I could have waited until after Mr. Carlson, but I guess the question I have, and you stated it out when you were talking about it's limited to mutual funds, indexed mutual funds, the SPI and the Dow Jones stock.
S&P 500.
S&P 500, yes, thank you. I guess the question I have is that tight enough? I mean, I know some cities got in trouble in the past with getting into funds, and is there a possibility we need to have a better definition in statute, or is there some definition out there that prevents them from getting into other ones that they say are index funds and may cause us to get in trouble, or is this tight enough for that?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Albright.
Representative Nelson, I think the manner in which that both the S&P 500 index as well as the broader Dow Jones, and we've even thought about the Russell 2000, are indexes that are widely known, very heavily regulated, cut across a number of diversification profiles. And so from that perspective, the broader the perspective, in my opinion, is, as Mr. Carlson and I spoke about this yesterday, would probably even go to the Russell 2000 because it takes into consideration capitalization structures, not just large cap, mid cap, and also a small cap. So you are getting the broadest breadth of the industrialized sectors as well as commercial, as well as the service sector. So you are, as one might put it, not putting all your eggs in one basket. So they are very heavily regulated, very, very widely watched. And from that perspective, I think that we could take comfort in the fact that no municipality is going to get in trouble by utilizing those, particularly with the additional oversight from the SBI.
Representative Nelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and that gives me some comfort, but I just wanted to make sure that, you know, because we had issues in the past where some cities got into trouble, and we don't want, that's why some of the restrictions were put on in the past, and we don't want them to go back and end up in more trouble, and then the state end up having to maybe bail somebody out, so that's the concern.
Mm-hmm. Representative Albright, I had a similar thought what Representative Nelson talked about, and my question was, it's very prescriptive and defined what you can invest in, those two indices and or something approved by SBI. My question was going to be, what happens if the Dow goes away and the S&P goes away? But those indices have been around for several decades and over 100 years, so I don't think they're going to go away by referencing those. But the fact that it is prescriptive as to what you can invest in, I think, deals with the issue of derivatives and other kinds of things, I think, that Representative Nelson was alluding to.
Mr. Chair, and that's a very valid question, and I would pertain to the history of the stock market globally as well as domestically, in consideration of how long the Dow Jones Industrial Average has been around. It has been around since the stock market exchange actually was conceived. The players within the Dow Jones Average have come and gone as their capitalization structures have changed, or they've gone out of business or merged, what have you. Using those, I think, as time warrants and going forward, I think we can take great comfort that the markets don't change overnight, and they are, even though the language is prescriptive, I think it gives someone a very sturdy hook to hang their investment strategy from for the not only the near term but the long term in terms of a balance as well as a structure to utilize for the long term.
Mr. Carlson, did you want to make comments at this time, or we'll have you back clean up, or how do you want to do this today?
Mr. Chairman, Gary Carlson has a 10:30 appointment, so if he could come on first and then Mr. Benzig, and then I'll back clean up if that's all right with
you. Certainly. Mr. Carlson, the other Mr. Carlson. And if you would identify yourself for the record, who you're with, and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Gary Carlson. I'm with the League of Minnesota Cities, and I want to thank Representative Albright for introducing this bill. We brought this to our policy committees this last year and debated how far should we go in authorizing new investment authority, and we debated the bill that Representative Albright introduced last year, and we felt that this was a good start to limit it to cities over 100,000 population, counties over 100,000 population, and entities with the highest credit rating. And it is a very limited list, as you can see from Mr. Keith Carlson's handout to the committee. So I just want to indicate our support for the bill. We appreciate the amendment that added the insurance pools to the bill that was done by Representative Albright as well. I do have our director of our insurance trust operations here if there's any questions about that. Basically, we support the bill, and we would encourage you to vote for it.
Members, any questions for Mr. Gary Carlson from the League of Minnesota Cities? Thank you, Mr. Carlson. I see no questions. Mr. Benzig from the County of Olmsted, their finance director. Good morning, sir, and welcome.
ask you to go ahead and introduce yourself for the record and the county and your position and proceed with your testimony, sir.
My name is Bob Benzik. I work for Olmsted County. I've been the chief financial officer for Olmsted for 30-some years. I have to say I'm very impressed with the introduction you gave. Felt very good.
Mr. Benzik, we don't usually do that with Representative Albright. It does have repercussions.
Okay. I stand admonished. Yes, thank you.
I'll only give him 20 minutes to stop talking about me like that.
Well, I just hit my 40th anniversary as a CPA in the state of Minnesota. I told you that I worked for Olmsted County for 33, and I've got responsibility for treasury functions at the county. The bill is a request to add a new tool for local governments, an additional long-term equity investment authority. Times have changed. When I started at the county 33 years ago, we were basically cash basis, and it didn't recognize many liabilities. Now we have to recognize liabilities, and we should. And if you have liabilities on your balance sheet, you need to have something to offset them, or you're basically passing costs into the future. So it's prudent to have an offsetting investment, and if we do it right, I think it can work well. Olmsted County has landfill post-closure care that we're taking care of, other post-employment benefits, vested vacation, and those three things pretty much fill up about 15% of our ability to invest in things. We've been restricted in what we can invest, and that was done to reduce risk and protect the assets. I think part of the perception was that local government officials may not have the skill to handle equity-type investments, but I think we've tried to build into this bill ways to handle that. The only, when you work with the short-term investments, the fixed income investments that we're allowed to work with, it turns out, I think, that you can hurt local people because they don't keep up with the things that we have to recognize as long-term liabilities. I went back and I calculated since 2009, after the recession hit, and looked at the liabilities that we have and the cash that we've got to set aside for them, and the fact that we've been restricted to very low returns means that we've basically lost $10 million over the period since 2009 because of the restrictions that we have. Those costs or the inability to invest appropriately meant that we've had to decrease services or increase taxes to keep up. The Fed has artificially reduced interest rates. We followed Minnesota law as it currently stands, and we've tried to use investment technology that was prudent. And that means basically over the last 8 years, we've only earned about 1% on the funds that we've had to invest. My 5B thing shows that our 5A, a 20-year compounded average yield of a two-year treasury note is about 2.88%. 20-year average of the S&P 500 index with reinvestment is over 7%. That's a significant difference. The State Board of Investment achieved an average return of over 8% for the last 20 years, in part by using equity investments. Even in normal times, it's a mistake to mismatch long-term liabilities with short-term investments. This bill would allow local governments to better match long-term liabilities and assets with a better long-term vehicle. We tried to make this prudent by limiting it to local governments that are likely to have professional staff, and we looked at those of over a population of 100,000 or AAA bond rating. We limited it to just 15% of what we have available for investments, and we built in an approval by the local governing board or council to say that they understand what's going on and they know that there's risk involved with this. We tried to make it low cost by limiting it to investments through the SBI via PERA or the broad index mutual funds that are about as low cost of an investment as you can find on the market. We also thought that investing in a broad market basket of the economy of the United States was probably as safe as we could be. This is something significant that you can do for citizens, and I think it comes without a cost to the state of Minnesota. So I'd be happy if you have any questions to try to field them.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Benzik. Questions for the testifier? Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to try to understand. It's only affecting giving more investment authorities to cities over $100,000 with a AAA bond rating. Would this affect, I know that some cities, smaller ones, but I don't know if these larger ones do this too, they use sweep accounts sometimes to put their cash in to gain interest and then they sweep the money back out. This doesn't affect them, their ability to do that, does it?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Benzik.
Representative. Completely separate parts of the authority that we have. Frankly, there shouldn't be any sweeping in and out of this. This is long-term, and what you make reference to is a tool that we can use for overnight-type investments. So very different ends of the spectrum.
Other questions for the testifier? Seeing none, Mr. Benzik, thank you for your testimony. And Mr. Carlson Keith from the Intercounty Association of Minnesota.
Mr. Chairman, members, I am Keith Carlson. I'm Executive Director of the Minnesota Intercounty Association that consists of 10 of the greater Minnesota regional center counties and four suburban counties here in Minnesota. I do want to indicate our association supports this bill. As you have already heard, the League of Minnesota Cities supports this bill, the City of Minneapolis, and the finance directors from Hennepin and Ramsey County, in addition to the counties in my organization. Both of those gentlemen, along with Mr. Benzik, worked extensively on this bill with the State Board of Investment, and I have also met at least on three different occasions with the State Auditor's Office about the bill. Just to address some of the questions that came up here, this is an expansion of the authority that for investments for those cities and counties over 100,000 population or those cities and counties below that threshold but who have achieved a AAA bond rating. It basically parallels what exists under current law where a county, city, or school district that has a liability for other post-employment benefits, basically retiree health care. If they want to put dollars aside to offset those liabilities in a trust, they may either invest those trusts with a local financial institution or with the State Board of Investment with the Public Employers Retirement Association, or PRA, acting as the administrator of those funds. I think that's about it. Certainly on the issue of what indices to be used, I have spoken with Mr. Perry over at SBI. He has suggested broadening this to just broad-based indexes. We would certainly be amenable to that, but are also comfortable with the existing language. I will address specifically Representative Nelson's questions about cities that have gotten trouble in these types of investments. I'll have to clarify that the troubles that I think he's referring to are the independent pension funds or basically volunteers or what at the time were independent pension funds with separate board of directors in the city of Minneapolis or possibly St. Paul or Duluth. No city, no county, no school district or township or other entity can invest in equities other than for other post-employment benefits right now under current law.
Is there anyone else present that would like to testify? I know that we have one more question, too. Representative Kwan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Carlson, looking at the materials provided, and you've got counties listed, cities, I noticed Duluth is missing. Is that because of bond rating?
Mr. Chairman, I think the cities have indicated a desire to capture what is in current statute that continues to recognize Duluth as a first-class city, despite the fact that they've fallen below the 100,000 population benefit. Right now, the bill does not capture that, so I believe between the League of Cities, myself, Ms. Dyson, and Representative Albright will have to have further discussion if they intentionally want to capture them.
Representative Quams.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The intent of the question was you've got a list of cities going down to one that's under the 5,000. So therefore, it's not just limited to the first class. I was curious because Duluth has already partaking of SBI with the Community Trust Fund, Investment Fund, and some other activities that you've touched upon. But I notice here is a list of the bond ratings, and I was curious if Duluth was left off this list when other smaller cities and larger cities are on it because of the bond rating, and then if that bond rating was impacted at all by the numerous interactions it already has with the SBI and these types of funds.
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Quam, you're correct that Duluth does have the authority both to invest in the other post-employment benefits with SBI, as well as they have separate statutory authority relating to the Duluth Community Investment Trust, which basically is the proceeds that they received from the tribe for the casino that's currently located within downtown Duluth. To expand beyond those two areas, they would need additional authority, and we would need an amendment to make sure that they're captured within the definition of first-class cities. They are not under the current language.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll pursue offline further clarification.
Thank you. Others that wanted to testify? Good morning and welcome. If you state your name and who you're with, and proceed your testimony.
Thank you very much.
Thank
Mr.
you.
Chair and members, my name is Patricia Nauman. I'm the Executive Director of Metro Cities, and I just wanted to offer our organization's support for Representative Albright's legislation, House File 409. Metro Cities did have quite a bit of discussion about this issue in our own policy development process over the summer, and we do support balancing, having legislation, which I believe this is, that balances sort of safeguarding assets with allowing qualifying cities to be able to take part in this additional authority. So we do support it as part of our revenue diversification policy, and I'm happy to stand for any questions. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions of the testifier? Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else present today that wishes to testify on the matter before the committee at this time? House File 409 as amended. Other member questions? Representative Albright, we will give you the final word.
Thank you, members, and Mr. Chair, for your consideration of House File 409. I would encourage your support. Thank you very much.
I renew my motion to re-refer House File 409 as amended to the Committee on State Government Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The motion carries. Representative Albright, you are on your way.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
The next bill we have before us is House File 330. Representative Nash, as he makes his way to the testifying table. And we do have a number of testifiers, so I'd ask that they kind of queue up here a little bit to our first person after Representative Nash introduces the bill and we get through some of the proceedings. Is going to be Remy Stone, followed by Ryan Hamilton, just to be on deck so you're ready to go here. Representative Nash, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House File 330 to be referred to the General Register, and I have an amendment.
Right. Representative Nash moves that House File 330 be re-referred to the General Register after today's proceedings. Representative Nash, which amendment would you like to bring forward this morning?
Chair, members, mine is the A1.
The A1 amendment. Representative Nash, it's the A1 amendment.
Just puts the bill in the form that I'd like to move forward, and it helps to remove some of the concerns of townships. So I'd just move the A1.
Representative Nash moves the A1 amendment. Discussion on the A1 amendment? All those in favor signify by saying aye to the A1 amendment.
Aye.
Aye.
The bill is now in the form that the author wishes. Proceed with your testimony, Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, for those of you that have been on the committee before, we've seen this bill. I wanted to thank my co-authors, Representative Quam, Representative Nelson. Both of you have been very helpful in crafting this language. This bill is a pretty straightforward bill from its concept, and I know that there are some people who have questions about it, but essentially It is asking that cities who wish to use what's called as an interim ordinance to potentially prevent a project from moving forward, when they choose to do so, that they first notify by a 10-day notification for a hearing, and that if they do vote to move on, that it has done so with a two-thirds majority vote of the council. The rationale behind that is really all about transparency. And having served myself on city government, and I know many members of the committee here have as well, there are, most of us are very much in favor of transparency. We want the people who come to do business in our community, who come to do projects in our community, who are coming to make an investment and deal with the community, to feel like they have been listened to and that they are a partner. There are some cities that don't necessarily do that, and this bill seeks to find a cure for that by providing opportunities for people who are moving those projects forward to at least come forward and address the concerns before the interim ordinance is enacted. It is all about transparency and accountability in city government, and we're asking that this bill get sent to the floor. I know that I'm working with many members of the committee here, and we have in years past. You know that I'm willing to work with you. And I think that in the spirit and essence of transparency, accountability, and working with the business community, that this is a good bill. Doesn't take any tools out of the toolkit of the cities. And, again, as a former mayor, I wouldn't want to do that, but it gives people who have these projects a little bit of breathing room and the opportunity to let their grievances be heard. So we do have some testifiers, and we'll just have them go from here with your indulgence.
Mr. Coyle, did you want to make any comments this morning before you took testimony?
Yeah, very briefly, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Peter Coyle. I represent the Builders Association of the Twin Cities. We strongly support the bill that's before you today, and we thank Representative Nash and the co-authors for their support of it. This bill gets at the heart of a problem that home builders address routinely in cities, and it's this. The cities are in full control of the rules and regulations that we must follow as applicants for any form of housing project. And yet, the interim ordinance authority allows cities unilaterally, without notice, to be able to block a project in its tracks, regardless of the level of investment that's occurred, as long as it's still in the application phase, and even in the worst case, to change the rules such that the application would no longer be properly filed and would be ruled invalid in that circumstance. Admittedly, an extreme outcome, but it does happen in some cases. As Representative Nash indicated, this bill addresses really a fundamental fairness argument. There are many property owner interests that are affected by a moratorium, particularly one that's adopted without any notice, without any opportunity for public input. It's not just the contractor who's trying to build or remodel a home. It's the property owner who may be trying to buy or sell property. It's the family that may be trying to relocate, sometimes from another jurisdiction, into a home. If the builder, the contractor, can't promise timely delivery of that home based on rules that the city controls, it really is very disruptive to the marketplace, and it's unfair to those affected stakeholders. So this bill, as Representative Nash has very clearly indicated, doesn't prevent a city from taking an action if it feels it's necessary. It doesn't prevent a city from acting unilaterally in the event of an emergency that they have to respond to, but it really provides a very simple level of fairness by giving public notice, allowing a constituent who's affected to come in and say, hey, time out, this is what you're doing to me, and allow perhaps for an exemption. But at the end of the day, if the council feels that this is really a necessary step to take, nothing will prevent them from doing that. Mr. Chairman, thank you very much for the opportunity to testify. I'm happy to respond to questions if there are, but I know there's others to testify as well.
Any questions for Representative Nash or Mr. Coyle at this time from committee members? Representative Freiberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a preliminary one. I know we'll have more discussion as this moves forward, but just wondering about the language of the bill on the amendments on line 1.6. It talks, you know, this would apply to any interim ordinance that regulates or prohibits activities related to housing. That, you know, I know some of the letters that have come out have expressed concern with that language being pretty broad. I'm just wondering, would it apply, you know, and it seems like it could even apply more broadly than that. A lot of local governments have mixed-use development that includes some housing, some commercial, some office space potentially. I'm wondering just if Representative Nash believes that it would apply to mixed-use development, so if just because that's related to housing as well, and if SOFA would extend also to some commercial properties in some instances, or office space, those types of things.
Representative Freiberg, I'm certainly going to ask Mr. Nash and possibly Ms. Dyson to chime in on this, but the way I read line 1.6, restricts, comma, or prohibits activity relating to housing only, that's pretty definitive, but I will defer to the bill author and others for that. Representative Nash?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Freiberg, yes, as we've envisioned it, it does apply to mixed use.
Representative Freiberg?
I know one issue that could potentially lead, just a follow-up question, so thank you, Representative Nash, Mr. Chair. One issue that could potentially that lead to a city or county considering an interim ordinance is the whole issue of the location of sex offenders. So I'm just wondering if, and that frequently deals with where they live, so I'm wondering if that would fall under the category of an activity related to housing.
Would like this question.
Mr. Chairman, I'm happy to respond. And
Mr. Coyle.
I understand the question. I understand the emotional sensitivity of that question. But I would say at the end of the day, if the city feels strongly that this is an issue that they want to address through a moratorium, nothing precludes them from taking that step. All they're required to do is give public notice, take public hearing, take public testimony, and then they can act. Nothing prevents them from stopping whatever it is they think they must stop. And if it's really truly an emergency, nothing prevents them from acting today in response to an emergency.
That'll do it for now.
Okay. At this time, we will take the list of testifiers that have expressed an interest in testifying before. As I said, Ms. Stone is up first, followed by Mr. Hamilton.
Everybody.
Good morning and welcome to the committee. If you'll identify yourself for the record and who you're with and proceed with your testimony.
Yeah, certainly. Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Remy Stone. I represent the Statewide Builders Association, the Builders Association of Minnesota. We have been deeply invested in the issue of moratoria for several years. It is essential for us to have certainty in the marketplace. But more importantly, we are here from consumers who want to know that there will be a supply of housing, new and existing, that they can rely on for their families and for their housing. And when moratoria comes into place, it has a chilling effect on expectations and planning, not only within the industry, but for the general public as a whole. So generally, the point here is that we, as an association, support this. We are here to work with you and with Representative Nash to make sure that this happens, and certainly to address any of the concerns that you may have about emergencies or other issues that cities may raise. But quite frankly, this is all about getting to the point of construction and making sure that we have a knowing environment to work within.
Ms. Stone, thank you for your testimony. Members, questions for Ms. Stone? Thank you. Mr. Hamilton, and then following Mr. Hamilton would be Mr. Grundhofer. Mr. Hamilton, welcome to the committee. I ask you to identify yourself for the record and who you're with and proceed with your testimony, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Ryan Hamilton. I'm Associate Legal Counsel for the Minnesota Association of Realtors. It's always a pleasure to testify before the Government Ops Committee. I have a great history with this committee, as the chair knows.
I'm used to seeing you on this side of the table versus that side of the table, Mr. Hamilton.
Our association represents over 18,000 licensed real estate professionals in each and every one of your districts. We're the folks out there helping those homeowners find that perfect lot, find that perfect home. And the word projects was mentioned in the previous testimony. I just want to remind the committee what those projects are. These are people's homes. This is probably the biggest financial investment that they're going to engage in their lives. The amount of time that goes into finding that perfect lot, finding that house, they're riding around with realtors for months, even years. And for that, all that work to be taken away on a night's work because of a moratorium, it's very frustrating for homeowners. So I just ask you that you consider that. And in my time with the realtors, the biggest cause of when we get calls from frustrated home buyers and home sellers, it's because of unmet expectations. You know, when they're forking over hundreds of thousands of dollars, they're expecting the full use and enjoyment of that property. They're expecting to be able to remodel that that bungalow or rent out that duplex to supplement their income. So we just ask you to consider those factors in the homeowner perspective when you're considering this bill. That's why we're here to support the bill, and we ask for a yes vote. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Hamilton. Questions for Mr. Hamilton by members of the committee? Seeing none, Mr. Grundhofer, followed then by Mr. King. Good morning, Mr. Grundhofer. If you'll identify yourself for the record and who you're with and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Tom Grundhofer, League General Counsel, League of Minnesota Cities General Counsel. Today I'm offering testimony on behalf of the League as well as testimony on behalf of a larger group of city associations. I think in your packet you have a letter that was, I think it's signed by at least four different city associations detailing our concerns with the particular bill. At the outset, I'd like to thank Representative Nash for his amendment. I think that dealt with one of the issues we were concerned about last year, and I do thank him for his continued discussions that he's having with us. I appreciate that. But with that, with all due respect to Senator Representative Nash, we have to oppose this bill. Really, our foremost concern with the bill is that we think it undermines the intent and purposes of moratorium ordinances. We believe moratorium ordinances are a rarely used but an important piece of tool in the local government toolbox that allows us to maintain the integrity of our land use planning process. Frankly, cities cannot always anticipate every emerging land use development that may be occurring in their communities. Moratoriums allow cities to put an immediate stop to a particular land use so that they can thoughtfully consider how they might want to regulate that. Mr. Coyle and others have talked about, well, in an emergency, we can adopt such a thing. Well, we don't really want to adopt local regulations in an emergency kind of scenario. We want to have the chance of adopting local regulations in a thoughtful and studied way. Well, some would argue that this impinges upon the property rights of homeowners. I would argue it infringes upon the property rights of others in the community who might be negatively affected by the unanticipated effects of a particular land use. Finally, the notice provision in the bill has the import of potentially allowing the person who brings the issue forward to get their particular land use okayed, but any subsequent folks kind of subject to being on hold for the period of the moratorium. Well, that's sort of our overriding concern. I do want to kind of highlight what amounts to three major concerns that we have with the bill. First, the bill does have the supermajority voting requirement in it. Just philosophically, there's been a great trend over the last number of years in local government land use to move away from supermajority approval ratings. Local city councils make decisions by majority, and we think that should be the rule of law. Maybe most significantly, and our biggest concern with the bill is the issue that Representative Freiberg identified, the whole issue of what is meant by related to housing. The proponents of this bill talk about applying to housing developments. Very frankly, the way the legislation is drafted, it applies to any kind of action that's related to housing. So it could be a predominantly commercial activity with a small housing component would be affected by this bill. If there's a single apartment in a commercial kind of development, that would make it related to housing. If the particular moratorium affected a land use, a non-residential land use, but happening in a residential area, that's probably related to housing. I'm not convinced that's necessarily the intent, but the way the law's drafted, the way the bill's drafted, related to is a very, very expansive term, and our Minnesota Supreme Court in recent years has interpreted the term related to extremely broadly. And then our third major concern with the bill is the 10-day notice requirement. And Mr. Coyle talked about the issue of fairness and all that sort of stuff and the transparency involved in that. The problem is with you have a 10-day notice provision, and for a lot of our communities, that goes well beyond 10 days because it takes a longer period of time to get the notice published in a newspaper before that action can be enacted. So you may be going on to 20 and 30 days. You combine that with the automatic 60-day approval statute that governs the actions of local governments in approving land use matters, you have the very potential that that notice requirement could end up in some automatic approvals for things that our cities don't want. With those concerns, we have to continue to oppose the bill. We are ready and willing to continue to work with Representative Nash on our concerns, but for now we need to oppose it. I would stand for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Grundhofer. Questions for the testifier. Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Grundhofer, I'm trying to kind of get my mind around the definition of activities related to housing only. Let's say a business owner, maybe there's a mixed-use development with housing above and retail below. Very common in a lot of our up-and-coming suburbs, main streets. You see it everywhere. Let's say somebody owns just the retail portion, not the housing above, and the city chooses to do an interim ordinance on something that's going with that retail. Even though that owner doesn't own the housing above, this would still bring up this, trigger this action then, wouldn't it?
Mr. Chair, Representative Yoakum, that's my interpretation, at least, of how you would interpret related to housing, sure.
Representative Freiberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a point of clarification, this might be for Ms. Dyson. The word only on line 1.4 of the, I'm sorry, I'm looking at the wrong amendment, 1.6 of the amendment, I think the only applies to if the ordinance, it's not activities related to housing only. It's activities related to housing only if the ordinance is approved by at least two-thirds of all members of the governing body. I think that's how I would read it. Could just Ms. Dyson clarify that, perhaps?
Mr. Chair and Representative Freiberg, I'm not quite clear what your question is. You're asking if only applies to the ordinance or to housing.
I'm asking if only. Yes, that is what I'm asking. Because earlier, I think it was Chair O'Driscoll said that he thought he read it as activities relating to housing only.
Mr. Chair and Representative Freiberg,
Dyson.
I would read it that it only applies if the ordinance, so the interim ordinance relating to housing, only takes effect if it's approved by two-thirds. So.
Representative Freiberg.
Yeah, thank you.
It's the two-thirds.
That's my reading as well, because okay. if you read it the way related to housing only, then presumably it wouldn't cover a mixed-use development. Because that includes commercial property in there as well. But if I read it to say only if the ordinance is approved by at least two-thirds of all members. So which then, as Mr. Grundhofer then confirms what Mr. Grundhofer said, that housing is a very broad term that could apply to many many different things. And so thank you. I just wanted that clarified.
Other questions for Mr. Grundhofer by members of the committee? Excuse me, Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, Mr. Grundhofer, you suggested having some clarification from language. Have you presented any language that would be acceptable?
Mr. Grundhofer.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we have floated some. I don't believe we've actually floated it to Representative Nash yet. We did talk extensively last year about several options, so there are options out there. We did share it with at least one of the representatives here.
Representative Nash.
Mr. Chair, Representative Peterson, thanks for the question. You know, given the fact that this is a new biennium, we have not talked, and I wish that we had, particularly given the level of criticism that's being levied at the bill. You know, as you've seen in years past, I'm happy to work with you, but I can't work with you if you don't come and sit down and chat.
Representative Joachim has a question.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. More of like a clarification to see where concerns lie with this vague language or why we're worried. Just as an example, and maybe Mr. Grundhofer can help me out on this if this would be the case. When I was on city council, we did a moratorium on vaping studios to kind of understand this new technology that was coming in with concerns for there's no restrictions or inspections and worrying about other items that could be used to vape. So we put a restriction on vaping studios, which would go into a retail location. And we do have a lot of mixed-use housing all along our main street where the retail's owned by somebody and the housing's owned by somebody else. A lot of our older buildings are that. You know, original main streets were mixed-use housing. So if we were to put a moratorium on, to try to put a moratorium on the vaping studios, and it was in a retail setting that had housing above, that would trigger us having to do this process then and having the two-thirds vote, the 10-day notification, and in the meantime, a vaping studio could have moved in. Is that correct?
Mr. Grundhofer.
Mr. Chair, Representative, arguably it could. I'm not going to say how a court would necessarily interpret that, but I can tell you the way the Supreme Court has interpreted related to zoning in recent years, it's a very broad interpretation.
Representative Nash?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Joachim, you know, again, I think you're making the argument that this is shutting the entire process down. It is not. It is the cities still have all the tools that they ever had available to them. What we're trying to do, and you and I have spoken extensively about this, what we're trying to do is make sure that the parties that are potentially going to be shut down have a mechanism and a vehicle to bring their grievances forward. You know, for example, we've got I know that this is one of Representative Nelson's concerns, that you've got people who have been slated to go and work on these projects. Well, they're going to be out of a job. And there are many examples in recent history of these going on for over a year. People's jobs are being affected. As we heard, people's housing is being affected. Their dream house could be shut down. So we're not taking tools away from the cities. They still have everything that they had previously. And again, you and I have spoken about that, and I would not do that, but we're trying to make sure that the people who are going to be adversely affected, both the tenants and the builders and the laborers, all have an opportunity to come forward and say, here are our concerns. If the city so chooses to still move forward with this, they still have that ability.
Representative Joachim, follow-up?
Yeah, just one quick one. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Nash, I get that, but also cities have to make that balance. And for Hopkins, we're a 2x2-mile town, so we have to be really careful when we do planning. And moratoriums are there to really protect that planning set. And we know that things can change in a development when they're bringing forward through the approval process, and it's a give and take between the developer and the city to try to get what fits perfectly in the city. My concern is, and maybe you could give me a better example to understand why this is so necessary, because I don't see cities doing a ton of moratoriums. So I'm just curious, can you give me some examples in the last few years where this has halted any project or why it's necessary?
Mr. Chair, Representative Joachim, yes, I do. I have a list. And some of them are more pronounced than others, but Apple Valley, Lake Elmo, Minneapolis, St. Paul, Minneapolis, Plymouth, Mendota Heights, Bloomington. Those are all cities who have done this, and they've lasted for quite some time. And what we're trying to do is, again, provide for the potentially aggrieved folks just a vehicle, an opportunity to come forward. And I can't imagine that anybody would be opposed to providing an opportunity for somebody to come forward. The way we've got it set up, you know, if the city wants to do this, all they have to do is put a 10-day notification, have a meeting, come forward, talk about it. They can still move forward with it. So it doesn't take away any of the tools that they've had.
Representative Joachim, last follow-up.
You just listed off a really pretty list of cities, but I was actually asking for specific projects.
You know what? I'm happy to provide those to you.
Representative Halverson, followed by Representative Tice.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And a few questions. First of all, we've had this discussion in the past, and Representative Nash and I have had discussions about the threshold of the two-thirds majority vote, the supermajority vote. One of the things that that we're being asked to do as legislators is to get in the way of our cities and their constituents, get in the way of one of the closest relationships between citizens and their government. Historically, in my city, we have had developments that have popped up, and citizens have gotten pretty nervous to the point that there are more than just folks who are looking to build that are part of this discussion, but folks that are adjacent to what's being built. In fact, in my community, the courts weighed in, and development moved forward, and there was a real clear decision and interpretation of current law in terms of not being able to take away the ability of a developer who's entered into an agreement to move forward with that development. And so we had one development that took a really long time because it was litigated, and another development that it was, the law had been interpreted and was very clear. So this particular housing development was able to move forward in the face of some pretty severe opposition by the surrounding communities. And so that's just an example in terms of the way that these kind of developments have worked out in my city. I am very reluctant to get in the way of my city and the citizens who live in my city, and to put myself as a legislator in between that relationship. I believe that citizens have to have a relationship with government that's closest to the citizens, and in this case, it's their city. So I really have a lot of concern about the two-thirds vote. I don't have any problem with transparency, and I hope that we can address the issue of the 10 days notice, because different cities have different kinds of abilities to do notification with their paper of record, and I do think that having this discussion makes a lot of sense, because there are aggrieved parties all around these kinds of developments, not just on one side, and so having public dialogue I think can be helpful in that, and so I definitely support that. I was going to ask the question about how many moratoria have been passed in the last year, but Representative Joaquim beat me to that. I guess I would ask Mr. Grunhofer what the remedy might be for that 10-day notification, and how we might give our cities a little bit more time so that we can move forward with the notification, we can move forward with a hearing in a way that works for our cities.
Mr. Grunhofer.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we've had some discussions about that. One of the concerns I think we've talked about is if a application is going in, if it's already gone in, the fact that you hold a hearing doesn't kind of give this, doesn't somehow short-circuit the right for the city to still consider it. You don't want it to be, I'll call it, sort of accidentally approved in the time period while you're having the notice and the hearing. So if you could sort of forestall the approval until after the hearing, until there's action actually taken on the moratorium after the public hearing, I think there's a way to structure something like that. Actually, if I'm not mistaken, I think there is, it's the A3 or A2 amendment kind of deals with one of those ideas.
Yeah. Nash, excuse me.
The other representative, and Mr. Chair and Representative Halverson, I was struck by your comment that you want to make sure that you don't get in the way of city government. Nor do I, but I also don't want to get in the way of people who have made an investment in a piece of land, or people who have been hired to do a job, or a developer that really is a business partner. So you say you don't want to get in the way of city government, but who's going to advocate for the people that are trying to build their dream job, or remodelers who are coming in to do a job, or laborers who have been tasked with the same thing? I mean, I think that it's an important two-way discussion. And at the moment, the league is really advocating for no change, and we've got to have a conversation around who's going to speak up for the people who want to locate in that community, who's going to speak up for the developers, who's going to speak up for the remodelers and the tile setters and all these folks who could, right now, with no notification, be completely shut off. And I just can't for the life of me think that that's a good thing. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I think that what we're missing is the balance. I'm hearing a lot of advocacy for one side. I have had, in fact, this development that I'm thinking about in my community, we had a golf course. We had a private owner who wanted to sell his land to a developer. And the citizen said, no, we can't let that happen. Well, the courts have said, actually, you can let that happen, and that's going to happen. So we knew that this private business was going to be sold. He had every right to do that, and the development was going to be a housing development. The discussion that went on in the community was incredibly intense, to the point where our city council members received death threats. I mean, it was intense. People wanted to see this development move forward. People did not want to see this development move forward. By having a public process that represented both sides of the issue, what we were able to get was appropriate buffering. You know, we were able to get, you know, concerns of the neighboring community met. Not perfectly, but we were able to get things like, you know, parks, accessibility, all those things were taken care of through this process. But my point is that the city did it. It wasn't the state legislature, and to me, that's really important. And I know I keep hearing doesn't take away a tool in the toolbox, but it does create, I think, a different expectation when we look at a two-thirds vote, when we look at timing. Like I said, I'm not opposed to doing hearings and transparency. I think it would actually help the process. And these things are painful in communities. It's really, it's hard for, and it's funny because then you start driving by these new developments and they look like they've always been there. And you know, for the most part, people get used to it, but process is really important, and I think creating a two-thirds threshold, you already know my position on that. We worked on that together last year, and I appreciate your willingness to work on it. And I think that if we can work out things like the two-thirds vote and the 10-day, we can get to a place where the process works for both sides, because I do think there needs to be balance on both sides. We need to continue to look at how we improve our communities and we like bringing new people into our communities, so I welcome our new residents that are building new homes in our community.
We have two more questions from members, plus we do have some others that need to testify and also to take public testimony. Representative Tice, followed by Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Grunhofer. I guess my comments come from, actually, as a former builder remodeler and current rental owner, and I think what I like about this is it does give a chance to slow the process down. A lot of times with moratoriums, I think cities think everybody knows about it just because they're talking about it. And sometimes that discussion doesn't get to the folks it needs to. In one of the neighboring cities, who's a big college town, they had a moratorium on rental properties. The colleges wanted to have more student dorms and student living there, so they had a moratorium on rentals. Former client of ours wanted to remodel their home to include a suite for their son, for her brother. It was her father's home, but he had passed, and they had the home, and they were going to make a suite for her brother who had some disabilities. But they couldn't do it because it added a kitchen for him to live independently, and that was against the moratorium. They sold the house, moved out of city limits, and did what they wanted to do. So I think those unintended consequences don't get discussed enough when there's a moratorium and it happens quickly. And those are the things I would like to see, you know, more dialogue on that, to have more people put their input in, because not everybody catches that. And then in my city, same thing with rentals. And it had mostly to do with student housing. We have rentals, but they're not rented by students. We have a lot of single moms with children. We have a lot of folks who can't, because of different laws and the way things are now with owning a home, they can't get a loan. And so we have a lot of the families. And I think when the moratorium came above, they had enough folks that stepped up that heard about it that slowed the process down. And they developed a task force. And I would think that would be something that a lot of folks would embrace, because you're getting your input from the folks who are affected. You look at folks who, you know, are in the process of buying homes for rental. And there is a need for that, and it's not just student housing, but for families that don't want to live in an apartment, and this is how they can have the yards, you know, the family setting. So for me, I really hope that you take in consideration that the intent of this is to slow it down, to get more input, because there are unintended consequences, and we all hate that for that to happen. But I appreciate your time here. I appreciate your concerns, and you know, there are times where I welcome moratoriums, but there are times, too, where I think that they happen very quickly. We don't know as much about them as we probably would like to, and then it's too late. So I appreciate your time, and thank you.
Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I served for 8 years on the Egan Park System Committee and then 8 years as a city council member. And I can't remember that we ever did a moratorium.
That's good.
But I did have concerns about some of the actions that we had to take and the time frames that they were done. You are dealing with people that are serving part-time. And when I was in those positions, it was during the heavy development of Egan. And that places a lot of stress in those particular situations. And so that's my concern when you try to cut down on time frames, et cetera. You're dealing with people who are not there all the time, and to reschedule something is very difficult. So I know I will be voting no on this. And just for the record, I did have a real estate license, so I do know a lot of the rules. And I also know right now we need a lot of affordable housing.
Mr. Grundhofer.
Mr. Chair and members, just one comment to Representative Tice. I would be less concerned about Representative Tice's comment if I knew what related to housing was. The problem is you have a predominantly commercial operation starting up tomorrow or starting up at the end of the week. My city council needs to take action to stop that commercial operation quickly. And that's what we're trying to do, because it's not, if it's up and operating, you can't do anything once it's operating. Then you're left with it. It's grandfathered in. So if I knew what related to housing was, I'd sort of understand the concern a little bit, but I am concerned beyond that.
Seeing no other questions, Mr. Grundhofer, thank you for your time. Mr. King, followed by Mr. Bagley. Mr. King, welcome to the committee. Phil, state your name and who you're with and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Driscoll. My name is Bobby King. I'm testifying on behalf of the Land Stewardship Project. We're a farm and rural group. We work on promoting family farm-based system of agriculture and strong rural communities. And our members live in townships and small cities throughout rural Minnesota. And we do greatly appreciate the amendment that takes townships out of the equation. Strong concerns about that. No longer the case with the modified bill, but we still have concerns about how it impacts our members living in particularly small rural cities. They want the city to have the power to look out for the best interests of the community. When they have concerns, they're going to go to their locally elected officials first. And they don't want to hear that our hands are tied or the way a state law has been passed has prevented us from taking effective action. So for us, the issue is really about having strong local control to look out for the local community. And I know this issue is a little tricky sometimes, but the way we talk about it, and it is the interim ordinance is really an emergency power. And it's for dealing with something you didn't anticipate in your zoning ordinance. Because as careful as cities try to be, there's going to be situations they can't anticipate. And when that happens, they need a pause. They don't want to say yes or no. They want to say what's going on. And the community often needs that, because when there's a big difference between when city staff find out about something, when elected officials find out about it, and then when the public finds out about it. And there's different levels of information brought to the table at each one of those stages, and sometimes citizens find out about it pretty late in the process. And there's often cause for a quick pause, and that's what the moratorium does. You know, there are over 850 cities in Minnesota, most of them small, most of them rural, most of them staffed very lightly by half-time people. So our specific concerns with the bill as it stands now is that a supermajority we feel is unwarranted. You shouldn't make an emergency power that's necessary to potentially look out for the best interests of the community more difficult to enact. The public hearing and 10-day notice is can be problematic for rural cities. I'm just thinking of Eota, Wabasha, Lindstrom, St. Charles, cities where some of our members live, I'm thinking of, those cities meet once a month. So because of this 60-day clock, the time could expire between when they wanted to do a moratorium and when they're able to do a moratorium, and the project must be permitted. In our experience, we've seen the power used responsibly. It seems like there's a few isolated cases of abuse, but they don't seem to me like they rise to the level of putting these restrictions on every single city, especially small rural cities in our state.
Mr. King, thank you. Questions for Mr. King by members of the committee? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony, sir. And Mr. Bagley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, James Vogley. I'm with the Builders Association of the Twin Cities in support of House File 330. We've heard a lot about developers and remodelers and local governments, and one group that, frankly, is most impacted is homeowners, both current homeowners, future homeowners, and as we look at this bill, we know that the housing market is fueled by sequencing and uncertainty, and would ask the committee to consider. We have multiple forums to approve developments. There's process, there's public input, and are asking in this bill, I think, to hold a consequential, an interim ordinance to that same standard of process and opportunities for all sides to be heard prior to the imposition of a moratorium on housing. Happy to stand for any questions.
Thank you, sir. Questions for the testifier? Seeing none, that concludes the list of testifiers who had asked to be on the list. Mr. Coyle, you were on the list again. You were part of the presentation. I'm assuming that you were good to go. Okay. Is there anyone else who would like to testify on the matter before the committee today? We do have two amendments that were offered. Representative Freiberg, your motion, that you may know something about those?
Yes, I can offer them now if you like.
Procedurally, we may have an issue because you didn't raise the issue of the amendments, two amendments, when we adopted the A1. So procedurally, I'm not exactly sure how we go about this. I'm going to ask Ms. Dyson to provide us some guidance on this.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. The amendments are drafted to the A1 amendment.
And so procedurally, can we still offer the A2 and A3 amendments for consideration, even though the A1 has already been incorporated?
Mr. Chair, I believe so. It would be engrossable.
Okay. Representative Freiberg, to your amendments.
Thank you for your indulgence, then, Mr. Chair. I can move the A2 amendment first.
Representative Freiberg moves the A2 amendment. Representative Freiberg, to the amendment.
Sure. This amendment removes the two-third vote requirement, the supermajority requirements in there. There was some discussion that this is still a tool in the toolbox, but do some of the limitations placed on this process, on the interim ordinance process in here, I think can, under many, I feel like these are overly broad restrictions that can place restrictions on what's intended to be, I thought Mr. King spoke to the need that most often interim ordinances are emergency powers. So local units of government need to be able to respond quickly and nimbly when there is a situation that arrives. I spent 9 years on the city council myself. The one time I can remember offhand that we adopted an interim ordinance, it was because we realized we had nothing in place regarding sexually oriented businesses. And we wanted to, we were worried that we realized there were locations within the city where under our zoning ordinances, a sexually oriented business would be able to locate near schools, churches, places like that. And we wanted to be able to quickly put a stop to it just so nobody decided to come to our city. We hadn't heard of any plans to, but it seemed like a situation where we wanted to be able to do that. So I mentioned that, so the two amendments I have, just address some of these limitations. I'm also very concerned about the language related to just the broadness of related to housing. I thought Mr. Grundhofer did a good job of explaining the concerns there. I don't, as this moves forward, I expect that discussion to continue, and possibly there might be an amendment on that at this, but there's not one at this point. But regarding the two-thirds vote requirement addressed by this amendment, I know that was removed in the version that passed the House last year, I believe. So, you know, that suggests maybe that Representative Nash might be amenable to it. You know, there are situations, because these are often urgent emergencies where an interim ordinance is considered, you know, the City Council might have to meet very quickly. And there could be a situation where two council members are sick or absent, in which case a unanimous vote would actually be required. You know, I raised the issue of sex offenders, and you know, that could be a situation where quick action is needed, and just requiring a unanimous vote there. You know, the other thing that was mentioned, I think, by Mr. Vogley was just that, you know, the intent of the bill is to protect homeowners, but I would argue that the intent of interim ordinances is often to protect homeowners as well, just because the processes there in place, there are limitations already in existing law, but there may be a very unwelcome use coming to a city, and the city elected officials need to be able to react quickly without too many artificial barriers in place like a unanimous vote. So, to protect the interests of the homeowners. So I would just offer this amendment just to remove the two-thirds vote requirement.
And for clarity, the A2 amendment is to the A1, an amendment to the amendment on the A1. Representative Nash, to the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Freiberg, I appreciate the opportunity for us to talk about this. And, yes, we can talk about it moving forward. But, members, I would appreciate a no vote on this. You know, there's time for us to still talk. I would like to take it to the floor and have the interested stakeholders, like the League, who has yet to get on my calendar. They didn't talk to me at all about this, so I think that I would rather have that conversation in my office and move forward, so I would urge a no vote.
Further discussion on the A2 amendment? Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I have to support this amendment. This is what got my support on the final passage of the bill, and we had, I think we threw up a good number of votes on that bill, and so it was an excellent compromise, and I appreciate Representative Nash being open to that. It's, I think, something that really gets us to a place where we have good policy going forward. I never start out with a bill thinking this is the final version, because I think input is really good. And to me, this gets us to a place where, as I've said before, I can support it. So I hope you consider it.
I'd like
Representative Freiberg.
Just a roll call.
Roll call being requested. Anyone else on the A2 to the A1 amendment? The clerk will take the roll.
Chair O'Driscoll?
No.
Vice Chair Pugh?
No.
Bliss?
No.
Fenton?
No.
Freiberg?
Yes.
Halverson?
Yes.
Jessup?
No.
Lee?
Yes.
Mason?
Yes.
Nash?
Nope.
Nelson?
Yes.
Peterson?
No.
Quam?
No.
Samstead?
Yes.
Swiedzinski?
No.
Tice?
No.
West?
No.
Joachim?
There being 7 ayes and 11 nays, the motion does not prevail and the amendment is not adopted. To the A3 amendment?
Sure. I'll offer the A3 amendment, Mr. Chair.
The A3 amendment is also to the A1 amendment. And Representative Freiberg, to the amendment, please.
Sure. This would allow an interim ordinance to go into effect as soon as a hearing is scheduled. Cities often need to adopt interim ordinances quickly. You know, just because it's an emergency power. Otherwise, development about something potentially objectionable could start before the city has had time to fully understand the impact. A 10-day delay could allow projects to start even in situations where a community doesn't want them. There is already a notice requirement if there's a special meeting, and that's 3 days, so I would encourage members to support this amendment.
Representative Nash, to the A3 to the A1.
Mr. Chair, Representative Freiberg, you and I have spoken beforehand. I'm not long-term opposed to this. I do want to sit down and chat with it. Again, members, I'm not saying no to something like this, but the League has not gotten on my calendar to come and talk about this. This is the first time we've seen this. You know, in the spirit of, as Representative Halverson called it, good dialogue, we haven't had one request to come and sit down to talk about this. So for now, I would urge members to vote no on this. But Representative Freiberg, I would love to sit down and chat. You know my concern about this particular amendment. So if we're going to work on it, I'd like to actually sit down and work in my office or your office or wherever and move through that. But for now, members, I would urge a no vote.
Members, discussion on the A3 to the A1 amendment. Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? No. The motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. To the bill, and one more time just to make sure, is there anyone else present today that would like to testify on the bill and the matter before the committee today? Let the record show there is no one else. Representative Freiberg.
Just a roll call on the bill.
Representative Freiberg requests a roll call. Member questions before Representative Joachim.
Mr. Chair, and actually it's more just a little bit of a comment because we've talked a lot about maintaining housing and affordability and housing for single families. And in the 9 years I served on the Hopkins City Council, we only had two moratoriums. And a little bit about Hopkins, we're a 2-by-2-mile town, 57% rental. In our comprehensive plan, we really stress maintaining our single-family homes and our housing stock. One of the moratoriums we had was to stop an entity that had come in that were going to rip down 4 single-family homes without replacing them. So those were 4 more single-family homes we wouldn't have in our city for people to purchase or rent later on. And it was an emergency action that needed to be happen right away. And having this 10-day lag in the notification and publication would have really hurt that. Now, we held public hearings on it anyway, just because we do believe in that dialogue. And I reiterate some of the things a lot of us have said about the need for transparency, and I get that. I really am disappointed the A2 amendment couldn't go on, and I hope you continue to work with the stakeholders. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Joachim. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Nash. And as you proceed forward on this bill, I know some of the comments from the city. People have said they're concerned about the 60-day window that stuff could get approved because of the 60-day window while they're waiting to have a hearing. And I guess as you go forward on this, maybe think about some way of putting a stop or a clock out, you know, delay on that 60-day window so that something doesn't, that may be objectionable, doesn't get approved because of that you're in this time frame of between meetings. Like I said, the A3 amendment, there are some good things to that. I think that going forward, I think you have a discussion and try and get that worked out, I guess is what I'm saying and what I'm asking.
Representative Nash.
Well, Mr. Chair and members, again, we've covered this ground before. You know that I'm willing to sit down and talk. Again, I wish that the League had taken the time to get on my calendar and we could have talked about these things. They didn't, and that's why I'm asking that rather than amend these on now, let's have that full discussion. Let's sit down and go through that. But again, I'm renewing my motion that this goes to the General Register because we do need somebody to speak up for the parties that we've talked about, you know, the builders, the homeowners, the people who would like to move into a community, and without any notification, they're being shut down. So, members, with that, I appreciate your vote.
Seeing no other member questions and a roll call being so asked, Representative Nelson, Representative Nash, did you want to make any other closing comments today?
In the interest of brevity, no.
Representative Nash renews his motion that House File 330, as amended, be re-referred to the General Register. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair O'Driscoll?
Yes.
Vice Chair Pugh?
Yes.
Bliss?
Yes.
Fenton?
Yes.
Freiberg?
No.
Halverson?
No.
Jessup?
Yes.
Lee?
No.
Mason?
No.
Nash?
Yes.
Nelson?
Yes.
Peterson?
Yes.
Quam?
Aye.
Samstead?
No.
Swedzinski?
Yep.
Tice?
Yes.
West?
Yes.
Yoel Waqeem?
No.
There being 12 ayes and 6 nays, the motion prevails. The bill is re-referred to the General Register.
Thank you, Chair and members.
There is no other business before the committee today. We are adjourned.